Good evening to you, Sport, for a Wednesday night and a special programme for you this evening between now and seven. A specially recorded fans forum at Ewood Park last night, organised by the Blackburn Rovers Action Group with special guests, manager Gary Bowyer, managing director Derek Shaw and director of communications Alan Myers.
Your station for Blackburn Rovers.
BBC Radio Lancashire.
Start of the season, Gary Bowyer, tell us what you've made of it. You've not had a game for 10 days or so. What have you made of your team's start?
I think we've certainly wanted a lot more points than what we've got. I think our players deserved a lot more points than what we've got. And I think we've been on the wrong side of some decisions that could have been prevented by technology. You know, you watch the Rugby League Grand Final and it gets used to its proper effects, and the money that's involved in football these days, I think it's something that's got to come into our game for the better.
Derek Shaw, you've been around all the games. What have you made of it?
Yeah, I think, as Gary says, we're a little bit disappointed with the points tally, but I think a lot of people in this room will have been to every game and they've seen, like away at Brighton, where we deserve more, and Fulham and QPR. I think we've played quite well without a lot of luck, and hopefully that's changing and we're going to start picking up more points.
You're all in dialogue with the owners in India, Alan Myers, yourself as much as anybody else. What's the response been from overseas to the start of the season?
Well, I think in fairness to them, they let you get on with it. I think they speak to Gary, you know, after games, and you know, and I think they, once the football season starts, they let you get on with it, and they watch the games, they watch every game. They have a live feed of every game, so I think they see for themselves that, and I think Derek alluded to it, you know, in the QPR game in particular, I thought the commitment the lads showed that night, you know, nobody could accuse anyone of not playing for this club and not putting it in for this club, and I don't know how many of you were at that game, but I know I felt proud to come away from that game and know that we had a team who were really putting it in for the manager and for the club.
Gary, do you think you're due some luck at some stage?
Yeah, I think if you look at our first season, I think we had 10 penalties or given away against us, away from home, and I don't think we've ever got the rub of the green with certain decisions, and that certainly happened this year, but you speak to the powers that be and then it seems to stop going against us for a while, so I think I might start ringing them every Sunday now.
It's really important we get to your questions now. The less of me, the more of you. Who would like to kick us off with the first question this evening? Melvin's point is, sorry to say this, but the good times are over for Rovers. I don't think they will go up for a long time. We should not have let last season's best player go to Aston Villa. What do you think, Gary, is his question?
I've always had a mindset of the glass is half full rather than half empty. I think we lost a wonderful player who within 18 months, when he first arrived, nobody had heard of. And a hell of a lot of work went into him. And he produced a hell of a lot of work himself. He would be the first, if he was in here tonight, to tell you the importance of his teammates and the role that they played. But when you look at his performance and what he did for us, you can't deny someone with that ambition and drive to be as good as he could be and play in the Premiership. That's for everybody that's in this room.
But I think too much is relied on Jordan Rose, really, because he wants to go.
You just said Rudy Gusted last year.
No, I'm just saying he wanted to go, didn't he? Rhodes, right, he wanted to go, but you kept him, you won't let him go. So I thought you kept them both together. Try 12 months, you get in a Premiership, you get a big payoff, pay all your debts, so you'll be right.
You've got my vote.
You don't want to swap seats, do you?
You've got my vote. No, listen, it's every player and every case is individual and different. You know, once they also stress the desire to go and play in the Premiership, you know, we could be sat here now talking about a player that was not playing in our team, and we missed the opportunity to make the profit that we did. You know, it was an unbelievable deal for the club when you consider what we paid for him. You know, we're talking about bringing in a player for hundreds of thousands and selling him for millions. From a business point of
view, 20 million, mate. If he scored another 20 goals this season, he could have been worth 20 million.
And if he didn't, we'd have lost the deal that we did. It's and there's also
worth more than 5 million.
I think we got more than 5 million for him.
6 million.
Can we clarify the valuation then? Is there any way to stop people shouting out various valuations?
It was 6. We got 6 million.
You're not worth more than 6 million.
Well, he possibly was, but the best other offer we had was 4. And the opening offer from Villa was 5. They're always up against the fact that when he played in the Premier League for Cardiff, he didn't do very well. And Rudy, he wanted to go. He came up to the offices on 2 or 3 occasions and he wanted to go to the Premier League. It was very difficult to have kept him.
I think you also have to consider the financial advantage for the player as well. That has to be taken into consideration, and nobody in this room can begrudge somebody that's going to go from that wage to that wage. Nobody in this room would turn it down and say, no, I'd rather stay where
you
I am.
Rhodes were worth 14 million, apparently, with Middlesbrough last season, 14 million. Now, Gested went for £6 million. Now, to me, Gested were worth at least 10 million, at least. And you're comparing Raw to 14 million. Matter of opinion,
well,
but
we were never offered 14 million for Jordan Rhodes. That was in the papers. We were offered a good sum, but a lot of it had add-ons for promotion and games and things. We were never offered 14 million.
Let's move on to our next question. Terry's got it.
Good evening, chaps.
Good evening.
My question is for Derek. Financial fair play. Where do we stand at the moment, and what will be the implications if we come out in January?
Well, without our finance guy here, we are approximately, as I've said before, we're probably one asset sale away from coming out of FFP, which would probably be a player under £5 million. If we came out of that in January, obviously we'd have to watch ourselves that we don't go straight back in it. So that's the situation at the moment. But every time you loan a player and spend more money, it all goes against your book balance, you know. So at this moment in time, we're probably one player which is under the sum of £5 million.
I think a lot of the fans do not understand about the financial fair play, which is very complex, like you said. But if we did come out of it, what we'll be allowed to spend, is there any limit or whatever, what we can do?
Well, it's quite a complicated formula, but we would have to watch that we don't start trading again. And I think the days of spending big for players is probably gone for now. And I think Gary's proven that some of the signings he's brought in who've been, well, free transfers at this situation, and obviously there's no such thing as a free transfer with the agency fees and everything you want to do, but we would be able to pay more on the basic salary than the cap we have at the moment.
Derek, when you say the days of spending big are gone for now, can you sort of give us an idea of how you define spending big? Do you see that as 2 million?
Yeah, I think that when the club's out of the embargo, I would be very surprised if the right player at the right age turned up with the right recommendation that a £2 million player could probably be, the money could probably be found.
Can I have that in writing, please?
if it was the right type of investment, I don't think you'll be getting many players towards 30 or even over where we're spending big money.
Just one final point from Terry, and then we'll get to our next question.
So basically, Derek, what you're saying, whatever happens in the future, if the bankers want to put money into the club, they're restricted what they can do, are they?
Well, they are in the Championship, yes.
Okay,
next question. This is one of the points about the FFP, where we have 12, 14,000 people here, and your derbies and some of these other clubs have got 30. And they're telling us it's supposed to be fair when they have so much more revenue to start with. And that was one of the arguments we put to some of these clubs at the Football League meetings. And I think one or two clubs are beginning to see that now, whether it ever changes going forward. But, you know, you've got Leeds and clubs like that with massive gates, and we've got to try and compete with them with our revenue we can create.
Next question.
It's a question for Mr. Myers. What do you do?
Good question, that. Where do you want me to start? We look after the media, look after the communications. When I came into this club, it was a difficult situation. It was forever in the media. The wrong things were being said in the media. It's a very fragile club in that respect, you know. So you've got two choices. Either you come out every day and talk about everything all the time and, you know, for want of a better term, wash your dirty linen in public, which, you know, I think you'll all agree has been done too much at this club. Or you quietly get on with the job and do what you need to do. I'm not just involved in communications. That's only a very small part of my job. When I came here, that's what I thought I was going to do, but it's not quite that. You know, there's a bit more to it than meets the
eye. Should we change the name of your role then? Because there's very little communication that actually comes out of the club to the fans.
Well, you say that, but we meet... No, you say that, but we meet with the fans forum on a regular basis. We meet with the action group on a regular basis. I've never not answered a fan who's written to me and spoken to me. There's different ways to communicate. We put a statement out last summer from the, you know, one of the first things that I was asked to do is to get the owners to apologise for what had happened. For the first time, I went over to India and they did that in a statement, which I think a lot of fans appreciated. Well, that's certainly what I got back on, you know, in the mail. But, you know, communication is not about talking all the time. You know, it's not about going out and talking in public all the time. It's about making sure that the fans know. We had the situation with Jordan Rhodes, not this summer, but the last summer, where, you know, there was a lot of speculation. We could have been out every day talking about things to do with Jordan Rhodes.
But that's an example of not communicating, because we didn't really understand what the situation was with Jordan Rhodes, because
there was
the
nothing
club was totally tight-lipped about it.
Yeah, because that was the best thing to do at the time, is what I'm saying. You know, and then as soon as, you know, we had the situation clarified, we did come out and make a statement, which I think everybody agreed with. You know, it'd be easy for me to come out and speak every couple of days, but it's about what you say, and it's about, you know, this club needed, in my opinion, this club needed some stability, some quiet, a little bit of dignity again, because before I came here, or before, you know, the last few years and the problems that it's had, I always came here and I was quite jealous coming here because of the way this club was run. You know, I thought that it was always dignified, it always said the right things, and it didn't say too much. And I just feel, and, you know, I'm more than happy to be told I'm wrong on that, you know, I just feel that's the best way to be at the moment, because it's very easy to say the wrong thing.
Answer Mr. Myers. He says he gets back to everybody who writes into him. I have emailed you on 4, 5, 6 occasions last season, and I've never had a decent reply off any of you yet. I emailed you about terms and conditions for the Bolton match when you threw us out the Darwin end. And not one of you has got back and give a proper response.
But we did of occasions.
No, you didn't. I've got all the emails at home, and I'll prove to it. Okay. Because you have not emailed me back. Lisa Talbot did, after I come down here and I kicked a fuss up before a match. Then I got a reply. But until then, I haven't had one off you or anybody.
I know I replied to a number of fans over that. And, you know, there was no simple answer to that. The fact was the health and safety people told us that we have to move seats. And, you know, as much as, you know, we didn't want to do that. We genuinely didn't want to do that. The last thing we want to do is cause inconvenience to our fans.
But on that fact as well, it was only for a certain fan. I would never have got a ticket for the Walton match because Blighton Rose didn't send one out. And it's not just me, there's a few other people as well who never received that ticket.
Well,
so you can't say that is good communication.
I'd have to look at, you know, the situation on that. But as far as I knew, people were given the seats. It wasn't the ones they wanted, and we got them changed. Because I think I remember, if it's the person I'm thinking about, he came and asked for a group of... Ben, is it? Is it Ben?
Yeah, it's Ben.
You know, I was in dialogue with Ben all the time over that. Like but I say, you know, no one was trying to cause any inconvenience to fans. They really weren't.
Like I was saying, you know, up to 2 days before that game, I had not received my ticket. You were sending tickets out through the post to everybody, to anywhere in the ground that you wanted to put them as fact, but yeah. we never received that ticket. And only for Ben, I would never receive that ticket. Well, so you can't really say you're good at communication.
I'll look at that. But, you know, as far as I knew at the time, everybody got the... Because Ben spoke with the ticket... I don't want to...
No, I'm just...
Talk about the... You know, but
I'm just talking about communication. The communication there is non-existent.
No, I think we had a problem. We had a problem in the early part of that because the letters went out to certain people. You know, and I said that at the time. I come out and said that on the website. No, we did, honestly. We said that. And the thing was on that is that we tried our best to make sure that people were reseated, you know, because, like I say, we don't do those sort of things lightly. You know, it's not something I ever want to do or any. It's not my decision. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we were told by Health and Safety that we had to move the police, you know, and Health and Safety said we had to move those seats. It wasn't what we wanted to do, you know. Well, we wouldn't have done it.
I don't want to say the full floor, so
no.
I'll leave it with you. And, you know,
no, absolutely. If there was I'll a problem, me, but I did reply, you know, well, I did reply.
You're with BBC Radio Lancashire. This is a Blackburn Rovers fans forum recorded at Ewood Park last night.
Your station for Blackburn Rovers.
BBC Radio Lancashire.
Next question, Glenn.
Yeah, my message is, the question's for Derek. Obviously, the financial fair play has obviously plagued the club, and Gary's having to deal with the hand he's been dealt. I think he spent about £3 million in the time he's been here and brought about 36 players in, which is credit to Gary. But my question, Derek, a lot of the things I read in the media and a lot of things that you've been saying regarding the financial fair play, about having to pay players off, excessive contracts, these players were brought in on your watch. You've signed these players. Your signature is on every one of these contracts. You're the managing director of Blackburn Rovers Football Club. And, you know, from reading what you say...
Yeah, Glenn, there's quite a number...
You've signed the players.
Yeah, fine. When I first joined this club, the first day I was here, we signed Leon Best. I was the director of the club, the global advisor... Right, I was instructed, because I was a director and I could sign them, and he didn't have a work permit, I signed those contracts. Most of those contracts, with my knowledge of the game, I thought were ludicrous. But I signed them because I were instructed to sign them, and I was a director. And Shebby, at the time, was not a director, he didn't have a work permit in the UK, and he could not sign those contracts.
Can I ask who instructed you to sign these players?
The owners instructed Shebby to sign those players, and I were instructed to sign those contracts.
So as a director, under English law, you sign these contracts, you're responsible as a director. To me, that's not somebody who should be running our football club. As a director, you need to be strong, you need to be responsible.
Yeah,
and you need to do what's in the best interest of Blackburn Rovers Football Club and do things to the best of your ability.
As a director, on your first day, 2 days, because I think I've been there 2 days when a tour arrived. So what do you do when your owners have instructed you to sign these players? Well, the contracts have already previously been discussed and you sign the players because you're instructed to.
But didn't you negotiate these contracts?
Yeah. Well...
To me, it's a lot of tail wagging the dog. And why was somebody who wasn't an employee of Blackburn Rovers negotiating contracts for Blackburn Rovers Football Club?
Well, I think, as you know, why wasn't somebody who was an employee? Because he was sent over here by the owners to act on their behalf. You met the fella more than anyone else. Yeah. You knew him more than I did. I remember you sat next to him in St George's Hall, applauding everything he said.
But in fairness, our club was going to the pot. We had a manager who our directors wouldn't remove, and he was the one person that actually stood up and listened to the fans and what they actually wanted and resurgitated that back to the owners rather than them collecting a wage and living the dream, of which I think you currently are, Derek.
Right, fine. I appreciate your opinion.
Anthony's got a point on similar lines, Anthony.
If just touching on what you said, Derek, there, if you say that the owners instructed you to sign these players, who instructed the owners to sign those players?
Who instructed the owners?
If they were overseas, if Shebby Singh was overseas without a UK work permit,
they'll have done it by email or telephone. They'll have done it by email or telephone.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, where was he getting his information from to sign?
I've no idea. I'd only just joined the club.
No. But
the first day I walked into the club, we signed Leon Best. I never met Leon Best. I weren't involved in any negotiations or anything.
It wasn't a question directed in terms of to be controversial. I was simply asking.
Well, I've answered
who on earth would instruct somebody from overseas to another overseas person? I understand you weren't responsible for that, but
I think the global advisor was in negotiation with the owners.
Ian, with a question.
It's a question for Gary. Gary, with the squad you've got now, I think most people in this room think that the team should be doing better than what it is doing. We have got a decent squad of players. But I would say over the last 2-3 years, the rotation of the squad has been bewildering, to say the least. We see sides above us that are doing well, consistently picking the same 11. Do you know your best 11? And also, could you give me the answer on how Martin Olsen, the player of the year, didn't start the season or has been out of the side for Tommy Spur?
Marcus Olsen started the season, and then we felt that at the time that from one or two performances that we were in a position where we could put Tommy Spur, who the season before was absolutely outstanding, and everybody recognised that. What that did by leaving him out of the team, we then got a response from him that when he got back in the team at QPR, his performance levels are back at what they were before he was out of the team, as in the last season. And there are times where players need that. Marcus's response was magnificent. And like you say, he's back to the performance levels against Ipswich. He was absolutely outstanding, both in his defending and his attacking. From a point of view of knowing your best team, I think if you look through the course of a season, in an ideal world, you'd love to pick the same 11 every week. But then you have to take into consideration the toughness of the Championship. You have to take into consideration, like I say, the form, and then obviously injuries. Hope Akpan came in. The last two games has been terrific for us, to say, you know, he's been out the team. But Danny Guthrie before that was starting to show the Premiership quality that he has. Injuries are an absolute nightmare, and suspensions, but it's part and parcel of the game. You also have to take into consideration injuries or people carrying injuries and playing through things. Some of our lads are unbelievable the way they play games, and you have to take them out because they're that committed to the club now. They would play with an injury, but you and your medical team and your support team know, with the experience and the data that's available to you, that you're risking them for being out for 8-10 weeks at a time. So those decisions have to be made. It's a part and parcel of the manager and the role. Last season, you look at the run-in from January, we had a horrific time with injuries. You look at everything that's available to you to see why, and sometimes it's just the actual nature of the game that it is, the speed and the intensity that it is nowadays.
It's supposed to be Derek Shaw. You've made the point in your first 2 days at Ewood Park that you looked over the contracts of Leon Best and Aturu, and you said that they were ludicrous. So why the hell did you give Henningberg the contract that you did with the 3-year... with no get-out clause?
Yeah, it was
That's
2 years.
That's the first part.
It was 2 years, actually. Yeah, go on.
Well, if it was 2 years, how much were we actually paying him? Because when he went to court, he got awarded $2.5 million, and you already paid him $600,000. Yeah. For somebody who'd never managed a club, who hadn't worked for 2 years, what's that telling us about you? Yeah. And secondly, after that, you can answer this one.
Go on.
The judge made some rather damning comments about you. Now, you're chairman of the board, and you have a board. So when you came back to that board, how on earth did they put faith in you and you weren't sacked? Answer whichever question you want first.
Well, the Berg situation, Right, I'd actually been off ill, and I came in to sign the contract because, once again, the global advisor couldn't sign it. We were led to believe that it was the exact same contract as Steve Keen had, with the same get out, with the same clauses. I signed the contract in the presence of Chevy and Karen Silk. The contract had come from the accountants and the lawyers.
Did Karen Silk not advise you that there was no 12 months clause in it? Be careful how you answer.
The situation was, it was supposed to be exactly the same contract as Steve Keen had, with the same thing. I did read it, yeah, but have you ever seen the size of a contract? I was assured it was the same.
You were responsible for the contract.
Yeah.
And you do actually say that with the 2 years, it does actually board the question of how much you were paying Edinburgh. Because young Gary at the side is on nowhere near as much money as that.
Yeah.
But then again... But
I can confirm that.
Well, anyway... Yeah, any decisions...
Gary, you can have £1 million bonus if you take us up. All you have to do is go out on the Saturday and make sure we win.
Yeah. Another question from this side of the room.
Yeah, it's a question to all three of you, really. Venky's suffered 5 years now, record losses, took us from the Premiership to the Championship, pilloried through the press, laughed at by football supporters. What are they getting out of being owners of Blackburn Rovers?
If I can answer that one first, I think, and I'm hearing a lot tonight, and I understand it totally. I've been here 10, 11 years, so I understand frustrations and people wanting answers. I do. I get that. Like I said initially when I first started, I try and look with a glass half full. I think anything, anybody, you've got to learn from experiences, right? You have to remember that, obviously, mistakes were made. Nobody's denying that. Nobody's hiding from that, from the owners, in terms of contracts, in terms of employments and what have you. But what I would say is we have to be careful as a club what you wish for sometimes, because my little knowledge of the financial side from non-footballing is that they're putting a lot of money into the club to make sure the club keeps getting run properly. And, you know, you look at some clubs and how they're trying to sell clubs and finances and all that. We've got to be very careful because they are putting a lot of money into the maintaining of this club. Now, you know, where mistakes have been made before,
Gary, I'm not saying they should leave at all. What I'm saying is I don't understand what they're getting out of it. What's on their side of the bargain? Of what are they getting from being owners of Blackburn Rovers?
If I could just jump in here, I think what they're getting out of it at the moment is a very large deficit in their bank account. It's costing them a lot of money, you know, and it's cost them an awful lot of money, this club. We are, in a sense, lucky to have them. I don't say that lightly, you know, and I don't say that. I know what's gone on here in the last few years. I know, because I covered a lot of it, as you know. You know, it's a real shame, a real, real shame what's happened to this football club over the years. But what I do know now, and what I see every day, is that you've got people here who want to try and get it back to what it was. I genuinely believe that. And if I thought for 1 second that wasn't the case, I would be gone. You know, I see a manager here, you know, who puts so much hard work in, day out, with the players. He brought players in who have upped the integrity of the club, because every player down there is a polite gentleman who will do anything for you, you know, and that's a big difference to a few years ago as well. They're players who will hold themselves properly when they're in public and when they deal with fans, and they're a credit to Gary. And that doesn't happen by accident, you know, that happens because, you know, they're looked at and they're researched before they come in. And he's been allowed to do that. Not in the last year or so, it's been a lot more difficult with FFP, and it really is difficult. But I see a club now which has started to become stable. But stability is no good. Stability is standing still in my book. You know, we have to move back on and start building a squad. But that takes time. You know, you can't go through what this club has gone through and it be an easy fix. It's just, the bottom line is it's just not an easy fix. And it's hard every day. And that's why, getting back to my point about communications, you know, it's really difficult what to say and when to say it. And you have to be right. It's very easy for me to come out and say the wrong things all the time, you know. And that's why You know, in a way, I'm glad we've got owners that don't come out. You know, you look at certain owners, they want to change the name of the club. They want to change the colour of the club shirts. These owners don't do that, in fairness to them. They've made mistakes. You know, I'll say that openly, and they will admit that as well. And I think people have made mistakes for them. But I see now, and I genuinely believe this, you know, I see now a club that are doing the right things. And all you can do as a director is each day, when your decision comes your way and you have to make that decision, is to make it in the best interest, not of Alan Myers, not of Derek Shaw, not of Gary Bowyer, but of Blackburn Rovers Football Club. You might make mistakes, you know, and no one is perfect. We will make mistakes. But we've got to look you guys in the eyes and be honest and sit in front of you whenever, you know, and we'll do that.
I've got a question for Derek. I'd like to know, with what is happening at QPR and with the ridiculous situation with their financial fair play, why are we not challenging their rules? Because their rules are ridiculous. And the thing is, if Uncle Jack were alive today, what do you think he would have said about FFP? Because I know the answer to this.
If Jack Walker was alive today, we would still have to work within the FFP regulations. And the problem you have at QPR, that's all in the hands of the lawyers. QPR are stating that the rules weren't in place the year they went down. So it's all going to end up in courts and lawyers and everything, and there's very little. Well, we can't do anything about it. We're in our situation because of a separate rule, what Blackburn Rovers, Leeds, and Nottingham Forest, unfortunately, fell foul of.
I beg to differ. I think Jack would have gone to the league and would have told them where to stick fair play.
I understand what you're saying, but we've discussed this with the people at Nottingham Forest and at the time with Leeds as well. But they've looked into it on the legal side of it. Were signed up, it were voted in favour by the football league clubs, and we have what we have. And until we could get, I think it's 17 clubs voting to change it, when it came in, when I first got involved, I think there were about three clubs who were in favour of not having FFP, and at the last meeting there was 14 who didn't want it. Now, I think that will continue to rise, and when you have the annual league meetings, hopefully one day it'll be voted out.
Les has a question.
Yeah, Mr. Shaw, moving the conversation on FFP forward a little bit, you rightly said that if we were to sell one player, that might get us off FFP for a season, then we're on a yo-yo. What sort of attendances does this club need to attain to make sure that we can sustain and compete competitively in the salary and transfer market at this level?
A lot more than we get now.
Yeah, we know that.
An awful lot more. But we are doing it. Last year, as you know, we lost over 40 million. Yeah. In that debt, there was certain things what had been put in there, paying off players, etc., etc. We expect it to be quite a bit under 20 million this year. The club's season ticket and the walk-ups, we only talked about it today, it probably only pays 5 or 6 players at the wages we have to pay to compete in this division. So a championship club at our level needs outside support from the owners. Unless we keep getting that, you know, it's very, very hard to you know, your Derbys and your bigger clubs with the big gates, it's very, very hard.
But,
you know, we could
sorry,
really
but,
do
but
to
outside
get...
outside support from the owners, if they keep pumping money in, surely that doesn't comply with the requirements of the FFP,
well,
because it's all about income versus expenditure.
They're allowed to pump it. I think it's 5 million this year, 4 next year. There is a level what you can put in, and then it's going to go up to about 13 million. It still would need only support, because we'd probably have to get gates of around 20,000 to really be able to compete, because I think most clubs who get automatic promotion probably have a wage bill of around 20 million. Gary probably knows more than that than I do. But you've got to spend the money to get the better players.
My name's Anthony Flynn. I want to look a little bit to the future. My question is to Alan and to Derek, but I just want to say to Gary that I'm encouraged by recent performances, and, you know, keep it up.
Thank you.
Make sure we beat them on 24th. Just make sure. So I don't know whether it's Alan or Derek, but I want to talk about the elephant in the room, which is you're talking about the size of the club. Well, we've lost 10,000 fans, which is basically a disgrace. Now, I know the reasons why. We all know what we've been through. It's been a very traumatic experience the last 5 years. But what are you actually doing with the database of supporters that we have in attracting them, contacting them? I'm not seeing that you're doing that, because there's plenty of people that I know that don't go and the club aren't reaching out to them.
When I first came in, you know, one of the things I wanted to do, I looked around and I felt that we didn't, as a club outside the ground, show off our history enough. So, you know, we did the bridges over the, you know, the history of the club.
Yet,
those sort of things, well, which we wanted to engage the fan zone. You know, we wanted to bring more fans down earlier to Ewood Park, which we've done. And we've done golden season ticket campaigns. We've done, you know, a number of different things which we're trying to engage with those fans. I agree with you. You know, there's not enough. There's people out there who we should be engaging with again. We've spoken with the council. We've got involved with the Blackburn Youth Zone.
You've spoken to the council, under a previous regime, they actually gave away 3,000 tickets via the council for people to collect at the town hall. Have you done anything like that? We've 18,000 empty seats at every home game, and you need to address that problem. Tell me what you have done hasn't had an impact at the minute. It's all right contacting the people that are still... We're all engaged. We're here. Yeah. There's 10,000 people who've gone, and you need to re-engage with them.
I know. I mean, one of the things that will re-engage those people is get back into the Premier League. You know, let's make no mistake about that. You know, people...
When we dropped into the Championship before, it didn't affect the attendances the way it's been affected now.
But the bottom line is...
He's offering us a decent product as well now. There's
absolutely
encouraging signs.
You know, we offer the best prices, I think, in the league. I think we offer fantastic service in our hospitality boxes and the lounges that we have. You know, we do an awful lot, I think, for the fans, you know, in that respect. And I think you get good quality service when you come here.
But they're not buying it. They're empty of the boxes.
You're right, I can't argue with that one.
Yeah.
You know, but all we can keep doing is what we do and the best we can do. But we do engage with people. We do, you know, we are getting involved with local people. Our community is second to none, our community department. You know, I've been involved in a lot of discussions with people. We're involving ourselves with the local Hive business community. We've also become a member of the Downtown Business Project, if you like, whatever it's called. I'm not quite sure what they call it, but... We are doing things which are trying to engage, you know, but...
You've not contacted people with a history of buying tickets at Ewood Park?
We do.
To ask them?
We do, honestly.
You've not?
We do.
I know more people that haven't had anything off you.
Okay, well, we know that. I mean, you know, it's not easy. You know, it's not easy when you're not in the Premier League. You know, that's a hard fact of football.
Mail shots, you're not talking millions of pounds.
No, but we do.
You're talking, you know...
Honestly, we do. We do contact those people. From a business point of view, only this week we were contacting people who have had, you know, seats and hospitality seats here before, and we contact them all the time. Our sales lads are never off the phones.
Okay, a question from the back of the room here.
Yeah, we're all upset about where we are, but we are where we are. Moving forward, it's a common knowledge that we've got a fabulous academy. Is the youth the way forward? And if so... If we put all our efforts into bringing the youngsters forward, are they going to get a chance in the first team, and will that impact FFP?
Youth will always get a chance at this club. It's from the time I've been here, it always has done. You know, look at the players that have been in the team and then got sold. You know, your Damien Duffs and what have you. But I think if you look at the current team, the importance of the academy is there at the forefront. It's something that obviously is very close to my heart, because that's why I was brought to the club initially. What I will say is whenever you're looking at young players and putting them in the first team, they're going to make mistakes. People have to be patient with that. You know, I think one of the most pleasing things about some of the performances recently is that we've only had a couple of lads that are over the age of 24. Now, for the future of the club, that's fantastic. The challenge is to hold on to all these players, and because then when a couple of years' time, you're looking at players that are a real ripe age with such a huge amount of league games under the belt. One thing that's massively important to everybody is experience. These players are getting that experience now, but the academy is so important to us. You know, currently you know, John O'Sullivan, Darragh Lenihan and David Rayer all came through last season and made their debuts and have strengthened our squad at a time where it's massively important to us because of the embargo. We're hopeful that we've got a couple more that are, you know, starting to show some promise now. And the thing is that you have to be patient with them, and they have to be patient because, you know, they think one training session with you, they should be playing against Real Madrid the following week.
This is a question for Gary. I'd like to ask if lessons have been learned about making 8 or 9 changes in the League Cup, considering the fact that we haven't made it round 2 in the last 3 seasons.
Well, I mean, this season, because of the size of the squad, we had to make that decision. In previous years, yeah, it's been about rotating the squad and looking after one or two. But I can assure you that we wanted to progress every year. And the players that you gave the opportunity to didn't go out and perform. It was as simple as that. Because, you know, we did the similar sort of thing in the FA Cup when we got to the quarterfinals. And it's simple. If you win and you get through, people are saying, well, well done, you gave the youth a chance. And if you get knocked out, you get called for it and get quizzed in a quiz question and answer session as to why you've made so many changes. And rightly so. But that is the industry that we're in.
Gary, we've got a very young side, as you know. But what do you expect for us for the next 6 weeks, which are massive games coming up for this club? And what we could divine our season, to be quite honest.
The beauty of the Championship is that you can look at your set of fixtures and they're all so competitive and there is no game that's a gimme, you know? I think history of the Championship, you see teams that come down from the Premiership and expect to just go back up because they've come out of the Premiership and become so unstuck. It just doesn't happen like that. An unbelievable amount of teams this season that could get promoted out of the Championship. It's that competitive. And I have to say, on the performances that our lads are showing and the experience that they've gained through the last couple of years, we're going to be right competitive and have a right good go at it. That's all we can do, and the lads are determined to do that. There's nothing to stop them, in my opinion, from having a right good season.
Obviously, we've got probably one of the best goal scorers outside of the Premier League. Just looking overall at the team, I know Corey Evans, watched him in midweek for Northern Ireland, really good. But without Rhodes up front scoring goals, with the greatest respect to Chris Brown and Nathan Delfonso, and Corey Evans and Jason Law and so on in middle at part, they are good players, they're good at the jobs. Where on earth are the goals going to come? Worst comes to worst, and we do end up losing Rhodes to a bid. I'm just worried as to where, without Jordan Rhodes, where we'll score goals, to be honest.
No, it's something that the players are aware of themselves. They understand that, and there's a complete recognition from all the players that they need to contribute. What's been pleasing to one point is that you look at the number of chances that we've created this season already, that we should have players contributing more than what they should have done in terms of the actual goal scored. My biggest concern would be if we weren't creating those chances. Because if you look at from what's been really pleasing this season is we look a real threat from set plays. Your Grant Hanleys and your Shane Duffys look like they're going to get on the end of things, which in previous years they've probably not done enough of. Now the challenge to those two and the others is to contribute more. 100%, the two wide men. You know, Craig Conway, Ben Marshall, they've got to contribute more goals and they know that. And it goes throughout the whole team. That said, if we could keep creating chances for Mr. Rhodes, then you're right, there's nobody better in this division.
If I can bring the discussion back to the owners, when did they last communicate with all three of you and what targets did they give you or expectations?
All three of us, probably a few weeks back actually, because Alan's been away and the international break and everything, but we had two of their senior representatives over, 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks?
Yes. About 3 weeks ago, who go through everything, go up to the academy and talk about everything, and they take back all the information. We speak quite regular with the main owners. Not as much as we have done previously. I think they're very busy with their own businesses.
So just to communicate back, they don't put any expectations on you. They don't communicate what they expect of this season or the future, or anything like that.
They very much want promotion, but in fairness,
we're
to
a fair
them,
way off that, though, aren't we?
But in, well, I think a lot of teams are a fair
with
way off
with the best
off
will
it,
in the world. The we're a fair on. Way off that.
They talk about wanting to get promoted, okay. but they do not put specifics saying if we don't do this, the manager's sacked. To this, that, and the other. They are very level-headed.
So they are expecting promotion.
They want us to get promoted.
Okay.
Gary, you've done a superb job since taking charge. You've steadied the ship. You've had to put up with difficulties of the transfer embargo. And considering who your bosses are, I don't think many would have stuck around as long as you have. Cheers for that. But Gary, do you feel you get the backing from the backroom staff? The reason I'm asking is because if you look at the time you've been manager, you seem to pick a very good start in 11, which I think is fantastic. We can often nudge in front in games, but can't seem to hold on to the lead. We seem to have the regular ability to self-destruct with costly individual errors. You seem to get out-thought too often by the opposition manager when they change things during the game. Sadly, in my opinion, this appears to be your weak spot. That's why I think for us to move forward, I feel you need someone to share the burden and help you motivate the players during the game.
The backroom staff, you'll meet a passionate backroom staff that cares so much about the club. When I first took over, it was vitally important to get someone that had played for the club that I knew would work undoubtedly to try and get this club back where it was in Craig Shaw. And he has far more than exceeded my expectations of what he would give to me and give to the club. I think over the course of the games, there are, like you say, there are times where individual errors have cost us. Simple. And that comes from young lads desperate to do well, sometimes being over keen, making mistakes, always wanting to learn and improve and get better. And that goes to the same as myself and the same as the staff. Everybody here is desperate to get this club back where it belongs. And that's only going to be done by hard work. And I can assure you that the backroom staff that you're talking about and the players, they work very, very hard for this club. I think when you look at where we are now and what we have in place in terms of the personnel, in terms of the staff, rather than looking back and talking about what happened, we all know what happened. Look forward and encourage and support these lads that have put a bit of pride back in the club. You look at the displays that they've put into the league and in the cups, and I can't fault them because they're desperate to do well. I work with them day in, day out. They are desperate to do well, and they're learning and they're young, and you know, they just want to get better. And I think in life generally it's just too easy to knock. It's too easy to be critical. You have to stand up for them and back them and support them and encourage them. And people will grow when that happens.
So to Gary, with the high turnover of players we've had recently and the likes of David Dunn going, do the players realise how much this Burnley game coming up means to the fans?
You know, it's common knowledge of how important the game is to both sets of supporters, to both sets of players. You know, I can assure you that with the staff members that we've got, from Leslie the receptionist to Harry Kenyon the kit man to Carl Brighty the kit man, they have been explaining to the new arrivals the importance of such a game. Yeah,
I have to say on this, you know, the first time my first game here was Burnley. It wasn't a good gone. People said, oh, you know, the East Lancashire, I've never been to one, you know, and I thought, yeah, okay, coming from Everton, Liverpool, you know, I've seen that derby. And I have to say, to experience it was something else. It really is something else. I have to say, it's fantastic. And I saw a picture on that first game, and you've probably seen it around, and there was some, and I wouldn't encourage pyrotechnics in any way, shape or form, but there was a fantastic look of our fans, and, you know, it felt like a proper match, you know, and I think, strangely enough, Jurgen Klopp. But he said to stop talking about money and talk about football. I think there's too many football clubs that don't do that. We've got to start talking about football again because it's what we all come to watch. It's what we all come to see, and it's what we all want to talk about. You know, we can concentrate our minds on owners and money and problems too much, and you lose the focus. The focus is about 11 footballers on that pitch, you know, and that's what we've got to keep our eyes on. And that's never more evident than it is in a couple of weeks' time, and I'm looking forward to it.
My question's for Gary. With your current injury list, are there any irons in the fire regarding bringing anybody in to boost the numbers?
Yeah, certainly. It's something that never stops. You know, you've always got to be looking, especially with the situation that we've had since January with the embargo, that you've got to have quite a few options available. The thing that is very challenging is that there's not a great pool of players available, because you go and ask various clubs if we can loan a player, you know, the answers are all the same. Clubs now are starting to sort of like, rather than loan them off and get them off the wage bill, is to keep them in their pool, because, you know, throughout the course of the season, injuries play a massive part. And then you see what happened with Modu Barrow, you know, we agree for him to come for 3 months and then Swansea get a couple of injuries and sell a player and loan a player, and before you know it, they're recalling him. So it's whilst it helps teams at times, sometimes it's very difficult to deal in that market as well. But like I say, we always work very, very hard on it. You know, I think you look at Tom Lawrence that we've got in now, and he's starting to show the signs that we always knew, because we followed him throughout his youth career. And, you know, he's starting to produce those levels of performances. But no, I won't deny it that we could certainly do with a body or two to just give us a boost and help out the bodies. Because whilst you say at the injury list, it's not a big one. But it just shows you with the restrictions that we're under this year, a couple of injuries, and, you know, we are then sort of like being very, very stretched. At the moment, we have two spaces available. And, you know, we just got to see how everybody comes back from internationals, because, you know, you wouldn't want to go out and get someone last week or at the start of this week that played in a certain position and then someone gets injured and you're snookered, do you know what I mean? And that's always been in the back of our heads, because under this rule of the embargo, we have two places available. If I use those two places, we can only work then on a one-in-one-out basis. But on that one-in-one-out basis, rather than having the full wage available to us, the restrictions take 25% off that. So you're having to then sort of like replace one player for argument's sake, let's say 10 grand, and I've only got 7.5 grand to play with. But that's the rules of them, so you have to be careful.
This is just going back to either Mr. Myers or Mr. Shaw. Regarding the pricing of the tickets for the Burnley game, a lot of my friends personally from Accrington, not big Rovers supporters, would go on the Burnley game with it reasonably priced. Looking at it from a football point of view, it is a big derby. We empty seats around the ground, it can't look like that. From another footballing point of view, in terms of professional game, you want every single little advantage you can get. Surely a full stadium, Burnley coming in looking around thinking, flipping out, they've got 25,000 on here. Mental state. Even if you just knock tickets back by £10, you know, 25 quid and a tenner, I don't know. I understand you've got to categorise games. But surely, and if you win that game, and all of a sudden things look up, you go a couple of games unbeaten, you'll see ticket sales boost further down the line. You've got to look at it each game by game. And for me, from a profits point of view, if you lose a couple of thousand on Burnley game, and you end up winning that game with the extra couple of thousand that are in the stands, you'll make a lot more money in the future. So I just think personally that Blackburn Rovers have missed a trick.
What we have to do is commercially look at every game.
Yeah.
You know,
I understand that.
In the best way we can make revenue, because that's, you know, that's what drives the club. We've talked all night about making sure that we get revenue in. You know, and our season tickets prices are,
yeah, they're fantastic.
I kell keep saying it, they're fantastic. You know,
Mr. Mayor, I don't want to interrupt.
No, no.
And people question loyalty and whatever. That's fair enough. There's people who aren't as loyal as others. There's other clubs down the road that are exactly the same. When you're doing well, you'll get more people supporting you.
Yeah.
when you do well after you beat Burnley, your profit's made up after it. You know, people are questioning your loyal supporters. Whether you like it or not, this football club needs them people back. And all it takes is, well, flipping out, they've docked ticket prices by a tenner. They'll come back for a big game like that, and it might just be a trigger in their head.
For me, you know, where I'd rather do, I don't know if deals is the right word, but where I'd rather look at fans is the, you know, like we've got 1,000 fans now, I believe, going to Milton Keynes on Saturday. Yeah. Our away support is fantastic. You know, it really is a credit to this football club, our away support, you know, and that's the sort of areas that we want to try and help the fans in that respect, you know, and that's where we should start to look at those sort of things.
And you can listen again online at bbc.co.uk/Radio Lancashire or on Twitter at BBC Lanksport.
Your station for Blackburn Rovers.
BBC Radio Lancashire.